All right, let's get started. Thanks for coming to the session. I want to begin my talk by acknowledging the fact that everybody in this room had a choice to make when they walked in here today. And that choice was, I can either A, try to get the last little bit of value that I can out of Build 2013 and go to this Windows Phone talk on app-to-app communication, or I can get an early start on my weekend and go get a burrito in the Mission. So I appreciate that you chose to come to my talk, and I will try to validate that decision and be more valuable than a burrito. So we're going to talk today about how you can take advantage of features and functionality that are being added to Windows Phone every single day. And you might wonder how that's possible without Microsoft necessarily shipping OS updates every single day. And the way that it's possible is that your peers, the community, are constantly upgrading their applications and adding new features, and you can actually take advantage of some of those features in your app. And so we're going to talk about that. And I do have a little bit of a tease that I do have an announcement towards the end of the session that I think people will find interesting and very useful. So my name is Sean McKenna. I'm a lead program manager on the developer platform team at Microsoft for Windows Phone. And one of the areas that my team owns is app-to-app communication, so how apps can exchange data back and forth and launch each other. And so that's what we're going to talk about today. But I want to put it into a little bit of context and talk about the sort of broader strategy of app-to-app communication within Windows Phone. So for those of you that have been around since the Windows Phone 7 days, just out of curiosity, how many people are sort of old school Windows Phone, Windows Phone 7? Okay, so a good number of you, that's great. So for you, this might be a bit of a review, but for new folks, I want to kind of set the scene here. So when we launched Windows Phone 7, obviously we had zero apps in the store, but we'd made a bunch of investments into some of the built-in experiences on the phone. And so we wanted to enable those new apps that were getting shipped to be able to take advantage of that functionality. So what we did was add a series of tasks, which we broadly group under the term launchers and choosers, which allow your application to launch some of the built-in applications to complete end-to-end user scenarios. So on screen here, we've got the phone call task, the marketplace detail task, the media player, and so on. And so those are cases where your app can launch some of the built-in functionality to help the user complete a scenario. So that's one-way communication. That's from your application out to some of the built-in experiences. So what about the other direction? Well, starting primarily with the Windows Phone 7.5 release, or the Mango codename release, we started adding the functionality where, okay, now we've got a decent number of apps in the store. How can we take those applications and enable some end-to-end scenarios going the other way? So you're going from the built-in experiences out to an application from the store. And so we started adding things like the photo edit picker, the search extras, lenses, quite a popular one that we added in the Windows Phone 8 release. And so that's a case where those built-in experiences are launching your application to complete some end-user scenario. So then we said, okay, we've got now both directions, from your app to built-in experiences, from built-in experiences to your app. What's missing? Well, there are cases where you want to actually have two store apps that can talk to each other and use each other to enable interesting end-to-end user scenarios. And so that's what we enabled in Windows Phone 8. So there are two features in particular that we added. One was custom URI associations or custom URI schemes, also sometimes referred to as custom protocols. And this is the idea where you've got a URI. The scheme name is the portion that comes before the colon. So some popular schemes are things like HTTP, FTP, maybe not so common anymore, Mail-to, you've probably seen. But what we wanted to enable was allowing applications to register their own custom schemes to be launchable from various places. And so this enables two things. One, you can launch other applications to complete end-user tasks, and there's a bunch of popular apps that have added schemes that we'll dive into a little bit later. And you can also register a scheme within your application and be launched from some of the core experiences. So even though we wanted to get the built-in make it so that the built-in applications didn't necessarily need to be involved in making that end-to-end scenario work, there are cases where we want to expose applications from some of those built-in experiences. And these ones in particular, browser, messaging, and email, are apps that we don't have other types of extensibility for. So this is another way that your application can get some exposure. We've also used this mechanism to enable some new scenarios where you want to launch built-in functionality. So in the past, as I showed in one of the earlier slides, when we wanted to add a new capability for an app to be able to launch one of the built-in experiences, we had to go and add a managed task, and that required revving the platform. And so you only saw those in major releases. Well, now we're in a situation where we can actually add some new functionality just by enabling new built-in custom schemes that you can launch in a common way as we change the platform. So this, what I'm showing on screen here, are some of the schemes that we've added that are not available through existing managed tasks. There's actually a much longer list that we've added that is duplicative of some of those managed tasks, primarily to enable Direct3D apps, so pure native apps that don't have the opportunity to call that native that .NET code, but still want to be able to launch some of the built-in apps. So the other feature that we added is custom file type associations. So very much the same idea. You can launch files in the appropriate app for that file type. So if you have a file that's in your isolated storage or in your package and you want to launch those into the appropriate handler, you can do that. Some of those common cases are obviously Microsoft Office, the Adobe Reader, but there's some smaller apps as well that have taken advantage of registering a custom file type that you can launch from your application. So one example here is the Hike and Bike app that handles GPX files, where GPX files are basically lists of geo-coordinates. And so that's interesting for geocaching and hiking and those types of scenarios. And again, the other direction works as well. You can register to handle custom file types in your app, and that gets you some additional exposure in the browser, the email app, and the Office Hub. So naturally, some of the more useful built-in file types on the file type association side are Office documents. We actually thought for quite some time about building an Office file launcher, so something that would be sort of in the bucket of that first slide that I showed. And then ultimately, we decided that that didn't really make sense. We should just make this fully flexible so that any application or any file type can be launched through that common mechanism. So with that, I'm going to switch over and do a quick demo of how you can launch an Office file. And actually, I will go to the device here first, because what I want to show is a simple enterprise application. So in Windows Phone 8, one of the major features that we added was enterprise support. And so some of the templates that we shipped were around enabling Company Hub applications. So if you have a company with an app within your enterprise that wants to show news and information that's going on within the enterprise, other pieces of information that might be useful to the enterprise user, you can do that. So we've got a small sample of that here. You can see that the user can see alerts. There's some profile information and so on. So one of the things that might be useful to add to this application and what users would expect is the ability to see some files that are part of their day-to-day work. And so that's the change that we're going to make to this app in this demo. So I've got the project here, the Contoso App Hub. And what I'm going to do is start by going into this panel page, which is that main page that you saw. And I'm going to add a new panorama item. I'm going to copy it from Notepad because I don't have the XAML snippet awesomeness yet, but I am very, very excited about that. Hopefully this is the last time I ever have to do this. So now I've got this new panorama item for recent documents. So now I'm going to go create the selection changed event handler. And before I actually do this, I'm going to load up the files that are actually, they're in my application package, but they could just as well be in your isolated storage. So I've just got a little helper method here to load those documents. So basically, I'm just creating a list of this Office File View Model, which is a view model that I've got within my app that just keeps track of things like the path to the file, and logo, and that sort of thing. And then it loops through and creates that list. And then I'm going to load that up in the unnavigated 2. And then I can go back to my selection change. OK, so I've got that Office File View Model that the user selected. And now what I'm going to do is create a storage file instance. So the storage file is what you're familiar with if you've done any Windows 8 programming with storage. So that's exactly what we're seeing here. And I'm going to use the I'm going to use the method that allows me to get an instance of that storage file from an application URI. So again, these are in my package. So these URIs are of the form ms-appx. And that URI is actually hanging off of that view model. So now I've got the storage file, and I'll just asyncify this guy. And now all I need to do is actually use the launcher class that is part of the Windows.system namespace and call the launch file async method, passing in that storage file. And that's that. I will point out here that with both the launch file async and the launch URI async that we're going to look at a little bit later, if you're familiar with these methods from Windows, we support only the overload that takes in the single parameter. So in Windows, there are some additional parameters that you can pass in for things like how do you want the UI to be displayed. We don't actually support those in Windows Phone right now. So let's jump back over to the phone. And I'm doing demos through video out, so I've got these all pre-prepared, but I promise you they're real. So now we've got the same app, but this recent docs panorama item with these documents, and I just tap on that, it's launching into the appropriate Office application. My favorite part of this demo is launching this slide deck on the phone. And then stepping through it here, it's like, that just blows your mind. It's so meta. So we could continue going through it from here if you guys are interested. That's pretty awesome. OK, so let's jump back to the slides now. Thanks, John. OK, so when it comes to file type associations, one of the common questions that I get is around security. And so I'm clearly taking a file that's either in my package or is in my isolated storage location, and I'm passing it off to another application. What exactly am I doing when I'm doing that? Am I giving access to the entirety of my package or isolated storage location, or how does that actually work? So I wanted to do just a little bit of a look under the hood so you understand exactly what's happening and what the security implications are. Because the sandbox model where apps are isolated from each other is a pretty core principle to the Windows Phone platform. So I want you to understand exactly how we're poking holes in it. So if you start from the source application, so that Contoso app that we looked at, when it calls that launch file async method, what's actually happening under the hood is that we are calling into a file brokering component that we built into the platform that we call the data sharing service. And then what that does is say, OK, I, as an application, want to share this particular file with another app. Actually, at this point, we don't know which app is going to handle that file, but I'm willing to trust the system to pick the right app. So please create a token that I can use to pass that across. So the data sharing service returns that token back to the source application, which then calls into the execution manager, which is the component that manages all the lifetime of applications, and says, OK, now launch this file. Here's this token that I got back from the data sharing service. Execution manager then determines which app is going to be launched to handle that file type. And that's where it checks into the package manager component, which is really the database on the system that manages all the apps that are installed and all the extensions that have been registered, including these file type associations. And at this point, there may actually be some UX, and we'll talk about that in a couple of slides. But ultimately, we get the right application chosen to handle the file. The execution manager then calls into the target application and provides that token. And so when you build an app that acts as a target app, you get that token in your navigation URI. You can pluck that out and use it to redeem for the file. So ultimately, you call back into the platform to turn that token into a storage file. And the data sharing service, which is a trusted privileged component within the phone, turns that token into a file by duplicating the file handle into the target apps process. So long story short, what are the two pieces of information that are really important with respect to security? One is that you're not actually providing full blanket access to that location, either the isolated storage location or the package. You're only providing access to that specific file. And second is that we only allow the target app to actually copy that file out into their own isolated storage directory. So you don't have to worry about the situation where the target app can take that file and modify it or delete it. All they can do is take a copy of it across into their app. Of course, once they take that copy, they can do with it whatever they want, and you're no longer in control of it. But the version that's within your package or your isolated storage container remains the same. OK, so now I'm going to pop back up above the hood and talk a little bit about user experience. I'm not going to take too long on this because I know it's a dev conference and people get irked when we start talking about user experience for too long. But I think it's important to cover it in the context of these features because they kind of have this checkered history when it comes to user experience. If people are remember using apps that handled file types or custom URI schemes back in the 90s in Windows, there were some issues with how that worked out. And so there's actually been some hesitation around adding these features into the phone because of that. So the three principles that we used to determine how we would build the user experience were, one, that the user is always in control. So apps, we don't allow apps to just take over a file extension. And that was really the biggest problem back in the day, was that you would install some app to handle maybe some very specific file type, some specific video format or photo format, and you just needed it to handle that thing. But of course, that app believed that it was the best darn photo handler in the world, and so it took over all 27 different photo formats, and the next time you went to launch a PNG or a JPEG, you were launching whatever this app was that you just installed. So now we want to make sure that the user is always in control. The second one is that we consider the list of applications to be private user data. And so we don't allow apps to query either the list of apps that are installed or the list of custom schemes or file type associations that are registered on the phone. And so we take care of making sure that the user never has a dead end. And so you, as a source application, should just launch the URI or launch the file type, and the appropriate thing will happen. The user will be able to complete that task. You don't have to worry about whether a target app is installed. These first two principles are actually the same as in Windows 8. So if you've done any development with custom schemes or file types in Windows 8, these are the same principles. The third one, we actually diverged a little bit because we think the phone user experience needs to be different. In Windows, you can register for any file type or any scheme that you like. And the user can manage which one that you want to use as the default. On the phone, we decided that we want to make sure that standard tasks that your mom is going to do or your cousin that's not a really technical person are going to do are always simple and consistent and predictable. And so what that means is that we've reserved some of the file types and URI schemes that are really standard for some of the built-in experiences. So if you're launching a PNG or a JPEG, that's always going to go to the built-in photo viewer. And really what we wanted to avoid there was, again, the notion that you might happen to get another app that's installed to start handling those things and then forget how you did that and then have to go dig deep somewhere in settings just to be able to open a photo that came in as an email attachment. So those are the three guiding principles for for how we built this. So I want to walk through very quickly what the different user experiences are that are associated with this. If you've been using a Windows Phone, since we shipped Windows Phone 8, you've probably seen some of this on your own device. So what we think is the most common case is that you will have one handler installed for a particular scheme or file type. So in this case, I've got a hiking application that enables two tasks where it's going to launch out to some other app. One is to be able to call the park ranger, and that's going to be through Skype. And the other one is to view the trail map, which is going to be a GPX file. So if I go ahead and call the park ranger, it's going to launch Skype using the Skype URI scheme. There's exactly one app installed to handle that, which is the Skype app. That app is immediately going to get launched. It can get those activation parameters and do with it what it will. The next case is where you've got no handlers installed. So this is probably what's going to happen before you get to the point where you've got one. So in this case, I go to view the trail map, but I don't have a handler installed for GPX. We will actually pop up a prompt that says, hey, you need an app to complete this task. Do you want to go to the store to get one? If the user says yes at this point, we will launch the store and search for the set of apps, specifically the set of apps that have registered for that extension. So the user can be confident that if they pick one of these apps, they're going to be able to open the file or the scheme that they chose. And then the final case, which frankly is we expect to be pretty rare, is that you have multiple apps installed to handle a particular scheme or file type. So in this case, imagine that for some reason I have multiple GPX handlers installed, and I tap on that button. We determine that there are multiple installed. We will show the user a disambiguation picker so they can choose which app they want to use to launch. You'll notice that there's no checkbox at the bottom that says always use this app. Again, we didn't want to create a whole settings default management experience, so we just said for the rare cases where this is going to happen, let's just show this picker. The user can choose the most appropriate application, and the next time if it happens again, they can make the appropriate choice in that case. Okay. So I mentioned at the beginning of the talk that there are new features and new functionality that's being added all the time to the platform through the dev community. So you're probably interested to know what's actually happening out in the wild. So since we shipped Windows Phone 8, there's been somewhere around 2,000 applications that have registered either as file type handlers or custom URI schemes. So you'll probably recognize some of the logos on the screen here. There are, in addition to some of the big players, there are some smaller apps that are taking advantage of this. I mentioned the hike and bike application. There's also this GPX viewer that are just a couple of random examples that I pulled out of the store. And these are apps that are actually providing value that you could go ahead and launch today from your application. And so we've got this nice meshing of applications that's happening to complete end-to-end user scenarios. Okay, so let's actually take a look at how you can build an application and augment an application with additional functionality using some of these URI associations. So what I've got is a concerts application, and I'll show you the sort of the base case of it, and then we'll build it up over time. So what this does is it goes out to the Eventful service, which is a great web service for getting information about concerts and events that are nearby, and it populates that into a list. And so there's a bunch of things going on. As much as I'd like to see Justin Timberlake bring Sexy back, I think I can't resist the nostalgic effect of Counting Crows. Who knew that they were still around? So this shows me some basic information that I'm pulling from the Eventful service about the concert. So the date and time that it's happening, where it's happening, ticket price information. There's a few other properties that I'm not displaying here that I could be. But if you think about it, so this is like moderately useful, right? But if you think about it, there's tons and tons of applications in the store that provide functionality that effectively surrounds this application from a scenario perspective, right? So obviously this is a band, so there's music that might be played. There's a venue involved, so I might want to know more about that venue. I might want to know how to get there. going to concerts tends to be a social thing, so I'd probably want to be able to round up some other people to go with me. So there's a bunch of different pieces of functionality that I could add to this application. And I can really, I could go ahead and try to build all of that functionality into the app. So talk to all the different web services and build UI for all of those different things that I mentioned. Or I could take advantage of the fact that a bunch of the applications that are providing that functionality are actually already probably installed on the user's device. If they're a concert goer, they've probably got some music apps. They've probably got a mapping application. So why not just take advantage of that and save myself some development cost, as well as give the users for the best experience for each of those particular features. So let's take a look at how we could add some of that functionality. We'll close this guy down. So we've got the starter version of the Concerts app here. And what I'm going to do is start by adding the ability to launch the Facebook application to suggest that other people might want to come with me to the show. So let me, again, go grab some content from Notepad. So I'm going to add a... I'm going to add an application bar here. And a menu item for share event. So this is how I'm going to launch the Facebook app. So I've tried really hard to make this complicated. It's really not that complicated. So that's why it's a 200 level talk. It's really not that hard. So let's go FB URI. And the Facebook URI is URI scheme is just FB, so I do FB colon post text equals, and now I'm going to put the different parameters in that I want to provide. And this is just a free form string. I'm going to say is playing at on, and then I'm actually going to go fill in those parameters. So this is going to be the venue, and finally the date. Oops. And then I'm going to take that launcher class that we saw earlier for launching files and do the same thing but with a URI. So I'll just take that URI that I created for Facebook and set that guy up to launch. So now I'm going to be able to share that content out to Facebook to see if anybody else wants to go with me. One of the other things that I might want to check before deciding whether I want to go to this show is what's the venue like? So, because a lot of us have probably been to concerts where we love the artist but hate the venue. There's one particular one in Seattle called Chop Suey, which I will never go to again because it is just a total sweat box. They don't have air conditioning, and even in a cold Seattle day, it is ridiculously hot. So if I read some reviews about that, I might not want to go. So the second thing I want to add is the ability to launch the Foursquare app, because Foursquare is an example of an app that has a bunch of interesting information about venues. So I'm going to go back to my XAML here and add another app bar item for Foursquare. Nice and simple. Now, in the case of Facebook, I actually had all of the content that I needed to launch the Facebook app already in my data model, so I didn't need to do anything else. In the Foursquare case, one of the parameters that I need to pass to the Foursquare app is the Foursquare venue ID. So I do need to do a little bit of integration with the Foursquare backend. So I've got a service here, or a helper that will go out and talk to the Foursquare service to get the venue ID. So I'm going to add that to my project. And then I will go into the venue model. And I'm just going to add a property here for the Foursquare ID. Okay, that's simple. And now I just need to, as I'm creating the event, and I'm initializing all the information about the event, I'm just going to new up a Foursquare service here. And use that to fill in the Foursquare ID, providing the venue name and its location. So now if you're clever, you're kind of wondering, okay, so how are you actually doing the resolution between the information you're getting from the Eventful service and the Foursquare app? There's no magic here. Basically, just passing in the name and the location, I get back potentially a collection of results, and I'm just choosing the first one. So if you're in a real app, you might do something a little bit more sophisticated to try to make sure that you're actually getting the appropriate ID, but this works out pretty well in practice. So now the last thing we need to do is jump back and hook up our event handler for this app bar menu item. And for the, Foursquare, we'll just go directly Foursquare uses whack-whack, even though they don't need to, and provide that ID. Oops. Okay. So now we've added Facebook, we've added Foursquare. Let's take a look at what the app looks like now. So we look at Counting Crows. We've got this app bar menu. So if I hit Share Event to Facebook, it's going to launch the Facebook app directly. Again, remember, there's one app, exactly one app installed. So we just launch it directly. There's no other UI that's involved. And so now you can see that string formatting that I did has been all filled in with the appropriate parameters. So I could post that off to Facebook. I can jump back here and go to view the venue. Again, launches the Foursquare app directly, and that'll dive right into, it'll deep link directly into information for that venue. And so I can look at tips and photos and get information about that. And so now I've very quickly added two very useful pieces of functionality to my concerts application. So let's keep going. What else can we add? Let's do... Now we've got the opportunity to share that information check out the venue. But in the case of Counting Crows, I kind of remember the music, but maybe I want a little refresher before I go see them. And I've also never seen them live, so I don't know if they're any good live, so maybe I want to check out some videos of a live performance and see if they're worth seeing. So I'm going to add the ability to launch the Spotify application to play some music, as well as the YouTube application to watch some videos. There's actually a number of music apps in the store that support custom schemes. Nokia Music is another case that does a really great job of it. There's actually a talk from the last build where the Nokia guys went and did a deep dive on all the functionality that they provide in the music app. So I encourage you to go check out that talk if you're interested in using Nokia Music. I'm going to focus on Spotify to do something a little different. And Spotify is actually an interesting case because they really deeply embraced the notion of custom schemes and using that as a way to enable functionality. And so to show that, I'm going to take a Spotify web service search request. So I'm going to search for Macklemore here in Fiddler. When we get the result back, we're going to get some JSON. And you'll see that within the result, they've provided a link to that particular artist. And this Spotify colon artist and then an ID, that's actually a URI that you can pass directly to the Spotify application to deep link and launch that content. So you don't even have to do the work yourself to put the string together. You can literally just take that string, do launch a URI async on it, and you will be launched into Spotify, into that content. So they've really embraced this model as a way of providing app-to-app communication. So let's go ahead and add this to our app. So once again, there's a little bit of service code that's required, so I'm going to add some helpers in there. The notion of music and videos are also new concepts in my app, so I'm going to add a couple of new models. Pretty straightforward. I'm also going to change the UI a little bit, so I'm going to add the event details UI to actually include a pivot that's going to provide the three different pieces of information, which is the show details as well as music and video. Let me just replace this. Now I've got my pivot. And for each of those, so the music and video pivots are providing just a couple of list boxes. So for each of those, I've got selection changed event handlers to wire up again. Create that guy. And that guy. We'll come back to these in a second. There's one more thing I need to do, which is populate that information from the service. So I'll go first into the artist view model, and I'm going to add a couple of bits of information here. First, for Spotify list of albums, as well as the Spotify URI for the artist. So again, that that URI that I showed in Fiddler, and then for the same thing for YouTube, I'm going to add a list of videos. Then I'm going to add a helper API to actually just load up that information into the artist view model. And finally, back into the event view model, I'm going to go ahead and call that initializer. Oops. Okay. So now, last but not least, we can jump back into our event handlers here. Okay. So now I've got the album. That album model that I added actually keeps that Spotify URI that I showed in Fiddler within it. So I can just go launch URI async. Forget, is this a URI or a string? It's a string, okay, good. And I can do the same thing for the YouTube videos. It looks exactly the same, but in the interest of time, I'll skip that and go straight to showing you what it looks like. Again, it's really hard to make this stuff complicated, so sorry if it looks repetitive. I'm trying to show you some of the things that you can take advantage of in your apps, but it's like dead simple. So, you know, it is what it is. So let's launch this version of the app. So again, I'm going to go into Counting Crows. And so now you see I've got my pivots, and I've got videos here. So now I'm going to launch one of these albums, and this is going to launch the Spotify application. So now I need everybody to be really quiet and not distract me, because I do not have the license rights to play this for you. And so I'm going to have to hit pause very quickly. So you're just going to hear music for a couple of seconds, and then we're going to pause it. So. Let's see, Across a Wire, that was one of the big Counting Crows albums. So you see the Spotify app got launched. It should start playing the music momentarily.
Please welcome my favorite band, Counting Crows.
Whew, okay. I think we're good. But you heard it, right? It was a live album, so they said, please welcome Counting Crows. So, I mean, actually, I'm not sure if I would get sued for that, because they hadn't actually started playing the music yet. And I can do the same thing for our videos. I'm just going to launch directly into the videos app, into the YouTube app, that is. And you should see, whoop, it's not quite showing fully, but the YouTube app is launched and is playing this video. Okay. So now we've got Facebook, Foursquare, Spotify, and YouTube integrated. Let's see, what else can we do? Right now, if I go and look at the details page and tap on the venue here, I'm using the Bing Maps directions task. So again, one of those launchers and choosers that I listed at the beginning of the talk. So that's launching into the Maps app and is providing directions from there. But one of the things that I might want to do is actually provide turn-by-turn directions for how to get to the venue. So now, with this, the way that I've got this implemented right now, I need to have the directions resolved here within the Maps app, and then tap on this button down at the bottom to launch into the appropriate turn-by-turn navigation app. But actually, I can actually cut out the middleman if that's the scenario that I really want to enable. So let's take a look at how we could do that. Whoops. So within my event page, I've got a address button click handler, so for when the user taps on that venue, I launch out to the Bing Maps directions task. Let me comment that out and instead do another scheme-based launch. So here I'm using the MS Drive-To scheme. This one's actually kind of interesting because this is a case where we've defined the scheme, and so that's why it has that MS prefix. But we actually don't have any Microsoft apps built into the platform that support it. So the intention here was we define the scheme, other apps register to handle that scheme, and then both the built-in experience, so the built-in search experience, as well as your applications can launch directly into the appropriate handler for that scheme. So let's take a look at how that works out. Now I tap on that venue and I just go directly, so I'm cutting out the middleman there of the mapping application directly into turn-by-turn navigation. And we are not likely to get a GPS signal in here, so we will have to go outside if we're gonna go to that concert. All right, let's jump back to PowerPoint. Okay, so really quickly, some of the schemes that I talked about that you might be interested in adding to your application, Spotify and YouTube, we showed. Facebook, I showed how to do post, but there's also profile, events, and groups. You can launch the top level of the Facebook app just by providing those without the identifier. If you integrate with the Facebook web service, you can get that information. Again, same thing for Foursquare. I used the venues. Deep link, but there are others that are interesting. And again, for mapping, there's both turn-by-turn directions as well as walking directions. So I'm sure you're looking at these slides and saying, okay, that's cool. Before I came in here today, I didn't know that any of these things existed, and how the heck would I have known if you weren't telling me? And so who is going to document these things? And so this is where I fish a little bit for a really passionate member of the community to take up the task of helping us document these things. So obviously, these are provided by apps that are in the store, so they're not things that we can officially document in MSDN because we don't control their lifetime or their formatting. But what tends to happen on other platforms is that members of the community create resources that keep as up-to-date as possible lists of some of these schemes. So if you're interested in taking on that responsibility on behalf of the community, that would be awesome. We would support you. So talk to me afterwards if that's something you're interested in doing. So now I want to show really quickly the flip side of this. So if I want to, this is all about launching other applications, but what if I want to give back now and be a handler for a particular scheme? So in the Concerts app, let's add the notion of supporting a launch by a scheme. So the first thing I need to do is go into the manifest. And unfortunately, this is not part of the GUI tool. You have to hand edit the manifest, but it's actually quite simple to do so. So within here, we can add extensions and protocol. And this is where I actually register the name of the scheme that I want to support. So the thing that goes before the colon. So I'm going to call it build concerts. And there's a couple of other parameters here that are just boilerplate. You can just copy them directly from MSDN. Okay, so now I've registered the scheme. Now what's going to happen is that if my app gets launched to handle that particular scheme, I'm going to get the original URI that it was launched with as a navigation URI. And so I need to pluck out the URI from the larger navigation URI and determine how I want to deep link within my application. So the best way to do that is to add a custom URI mapper. So we'll add a new class here. We'll call it Concerts URI Mapper. And we will extend this from URI Mapper Base. And implement that guy. So URI Mapper Base defines exactly one method, which is map URI. And now I add in the code to actually handle plucking out that URI. So this is pretty straightforward, just string parsing to figure out, okay, this is the string that I'm looking for coming in, and I want to take out the event ID and then pass that into my event page in the format that it's already expecting. So once you get to returning this URI, the rest of your application stays the same. You don't need to modify the specific pages to handle it. So now we should be all set up to get launched. So I would like to encourage my plant in the audience to send a message to me, because one of the things that I've I'll show that really quickly. One of the things that I've added to the app offline, and I'm not going to show it because it's, again, exactly what you've seen, is a button. There we go. A button to be able to send a message via SMS that includes that scheme. So you see this message arrived from Peter, and it's got that build concerts with the event ID in the format that I showed before. And you'll notice that it's actually automatically already been turned into a link. So what we're doing, if you remember, I mentioned that this registering a scheme is a way for your app to get exposed in additional experiences throughout the phone. When you go into the messaging application, we're actually parsing those messages in the same way that we look for addresses and phone numbers to turn those into links. We also look for scheme registrations that are installed on the phone so that we can automatically turn those into links so that when I go and tap on this, I can just launch directly into the application. And obviously, Peter would like to bring Sexy back and not go see Counting Crows, so I guess we can do that. So that's just, again, deep linked directly into the application. And from here, it's all exactly the same as it otherwise would have been. OK. So let's keep going. One of the really interesting things that you can do with this is actually expand the ways that your app can get launched, not only through those built-in experiences, but also through proximity. So we've added the proximity APIs in Windows Phone 8 as a way to share information over NFC and Bluetooth and sort of bootstrap that connection. Some of you may have seen Peter's talk this morning where he went into detail on how you can do that and open up a socket and be able to pass information back and forth that way. You can also just pass a URI directly across using those APIs. And again, you can launch the app in exactly the same way. So we've been looking at kind of the notion of source apps and target apps. As a target application, so the concerts app here where I've registered to handle that build concert scheme, I can actually be launched via proximity but purely by virtue of having done that registration. So I don't need to do anything different. I don't need to add any additional handler code. I don't need to actually declare the proximity capability. Just by virtue of having registered that scheme, I can get launched to handle that URI coming across. From the source app's perspective, so if I want to be the app that's actually sending the URI to the other device, I do need to declare the proximity capability, but launching that other app is quite straightforward through the proximity API. So let's take a look at how we would add that. So once again, we're going to go back into our event page. And add, I don't think I prepped this one, let's see. Add another app bar item. Oops. So we'll call this tap and send button. Create a quick event handler for that guy. Okay, so in here, I just need to add a couple of lines of code to take a URI of the format that we looked at before, so this build concerts event ID, and pass that across to another device using proximity. So as soon as I say publish URI message here, the proximity service will start broadcasting that URI to nearby devices. And then I've got this inline delegate to handle stopping that publishing once the message has actually been delivered. So now let's take a look at how that looks to the user. And this is going to require a little bit of fancy footwork. Got a couple of different devices going here. So there I've got the tap and send event. So I'm going to tap on that actually on the other device, but I just want to show you how that looks. So I tap on that on this side. Now I'm going to tap these devices together. And the URI has now been sent across. I get this prompt from the system asking, do I want to accept this content? I say yes. And I'm immediately launched into the application deep linked to the content that the other devices sent me. So now you're in a situation where like you're looking at the concerts app, and you see a concert that you want to go to, you could send a message, as Peter did. Or if the person you might want to go with is standing right next to you, you can tap your devices together, send that URI across. And all the same user experience applies. So if the user that I'm sending that URI to does not have the app installed, they will get a prompt to go to the store and get it. And if they have multiple handlers installed, they'll get that disambiguation picker. So once that URI is sent across, all of the same user experience applies. Okay, so at the beginning of the talk, I promised a little announcement that I think people are going to find interesting. I showed before a bunch of schemes that are supported by some of the top-tier apps that you might want to take advantage of. One of them that I had on there was Facebook, and I showed, I think there's profile and events and groups and posts and so on. There's one other scheme or task that Facebook supports that we really, really wanted to get added to the Facebook application because it's something that can really enable a lot of applications. And so I'm very happy to announce that Facebook will be bringing single sign-on through the Facebook app. And so the way this is going to work, if you're familiar with how single sign-on works on other mobile platforms through Facebook, it's going to look very much the same on Windows Phone. So you'll register your app with the Facebook Dev Portal. You'll invoke the authorization UI within the Facebook app by passing in the app ID and some additional parameters around the permissions that you want to support. And then as soon as the user goes through that flow, they will launch back into your application. So you just need to support being reactivated once the authorization flow is complete. And then you'll get a token, and you'll be able to interact with the Facebook service. So we think that's going to make it much easier for apps to interact with Facebook and use that for profile information. OK, so let's recap. What are the things that are interesting here? We'd like you to consider using URI schemes and file associations to add additional functionality to your application. Also consider if it makes sense for your app to add your own custom schemes and file types, both for additional exposure for your app as well as just to help out the broader community. And finally, help us evangelize this. Let other people know that these things are available. And again, if somebody's interested in taking up the charge of making a wiki or some other out-of-band documentation about the schemes that are supported in the phone, we would fully support that. So with that, I'm going to wrap up and say thank you very much. Thank you for coming to the session, and thank you for coming to Build. All right, so we're going to take questions. We've got about 5 minutes. If you want to ask a question, please come up to the mic. I also will give this device away, but we'll do that after we take some questions.
You talk about launching the applications, and it's just one way. Do you have any facility or any suggestions on bringing data back?
Yeah, good question. So the scheme-based launching is a one-way launch. The way that you generally will enable back-and-forth communication is to pass in the URI that you want to be called back with as part of the parameters that you're sending in that one-way communication. So effectively, bidirectional communication becomes two one-way scheme invocations. So obviously, you can't use that to do sort of lots of back-and-forth RPC because the user is actually moving back and forth between the apps. But you can enable some amount of back-and-forth that way. Yeah, so if you want to pass something more than a URI, you would have to build some additional out-of-band mechanism, whether you're passing an ID to something in the cloud or that sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, and Able, just the app that launches, and it takes more than 4 hours to run. I mean the general users use longer than 4 hours, and by the time the source app dies, is there any way to somehow keep it resuscitated so that the source app doesn't die when it launches the other app through the ULS key?
So you're saying you want to keep the source application
running?
I don't want it to die.
The
source app is always going to be suspended because you're moving between applications. Whether or not it gets actually terminated and dehydrated,
tombstoned,
depends on the memory constraints on the device at that time. So,
the phone does it automatically every 4 hours. I mean, if it sits idle for 4 hours, that's by default. But sometimes that app being launched can run longer than 4 hours. And by the time the person's done using it and want to go back to source app, well, the app's no more.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing different about the way that the app launching and app lifecycle works with respect to custom schemes. So,
yeah, I want that source app to live, but so far I couldn't find any solution. So.
Okay. Yeah, we can talk more offline.
Hello, my question is more relevant to enterprise. So if you have a bunch of applications that are coming from same family and you want to guarantee that your app actually launch another app of your own, is there any way to do it, or it's because you are in the Wild West, mm-hmm. you don't know which one of the apps will be picked up, and chances are that that's an app that you don't want to actually be launched. So.
Yeah, so the good news is that within within an enterprise or within a particular publisher, you can actually query the list of installed applications and launch other apps from that same publisher. And you can do that through, I can't remember exactly what the API is called, but there is a facility for doing that.
To get the list of publisher apps. But do you know that which of those applications are registered for the particular URI? Or
no.
Because somebody else might also register for that URI, and then after that, you might think that your app is going to pick it up, but who knows? It depends on the user to tap in one of those in that list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so in that case, you kind of have to trust the user that they're going to choose the right application. You can also, what we found generally is just make your URIs unique such that, attempt to make them unique such that you're not going to run into resolution issues. And then, there's always the fear that somebody might try to stomp on that, but in practice, it doesn't really happen.
Correct. Yeah. But that opens it secure. It might open a security problem if somebody else actually installed that. So.
Yeah.
I think that's a good thing to think in terms of at least roadmap. Thank
yep.
you.
Thanks.
So the API you want is windows.phone.management.deployment. That's an app space that lets you discover other apps if you like.
And launch them.
I have a quick one over here.
Oh, sorry, yeah.
Yeah. You probably answered this with the first question, but basically I was curious, is there any way to pass in a file stream to another application?
No, there's nothing supported in the platform. So really what you can pass is what you can serialize in a URI. Mm-hmm. Obviously, if you want to have some out-of-band mechanism where you're passing in an ID that is pointing to some cloud resource, you can do that. But there's no way to do it within the platform.
And no future plans to support that?
We can't talk about future plans, unfortunately. Yeah.
So just... expounding on the other gentleman's question, you talked about token being passed. I'm assuming it's not explicitly being sent on the URI and it's happening underneath.
In the file case?
In the URI sharing.
In URI schemes, you're constructing the entire scheme and that's what you launch and that's basically what the other app gets on the other side. In the case of file type associations, there is a token that gets passed into the target app. That is completely transparent from the source application's perspective. So it just calls launch file async, and we take care of generating that token and passing it to the target. On the target app side, you do actually see the token, because in your navigation URI, you will get that file token. You need to pull that out and then call an API on the shared storage access manager class to do the copy of the file across into your local storage.
So that leads me to the other question that I had about the shared storage. Is that something like some other platforms have, like a key store, where it's an encrypted storage where you can store your tokens and passwords, and other apps can share it? What other apps can, how can they share it? I mean, do they have some artifact that needs to be shared?
So we don't currently have any shared storage capability in Windows Phone. So every app is sandboxed, and the only way you can pass content across is via file or URI.
Okay. Yep. Cool. Thanks.
Hi, Sean.
Hello.
Good talk.
Thanks.
Going back and reiterating the same theme, file sharing remote file system application, wanting to be able to open up Word document in Office and get it back, to put it back where it came from. That's the underlying token that you're referring to. It contains a standard mechanism for an app to put something, send it back where it came from?
No, so the file token is just used for the target app to be able to get access to that file so that they can copy it across into their own storage. So there's no facility currently for you to modify that file and push it back to where it originally came from. It's a one-way pull of the file across into the target app.
Okay, thanks.
Yep.
I was wondering if there's any way to use the URI to kick off a background agent or do something without a UI?
No. So in both of these cases, launching the foreground application is required and is implicit.
Yeah, a simple question. Are these app-to-app capability also apply to Windows application?
Yes. So the APIs that I showed with the launcher class, that is an API that's shared between Windows and Windows Phone. And so that code is common. The features exist in Windows as well. The only difference is on the activation side. So as the target application, the way that you get the information when you get activated is different, just because our app models are not exactly the same. So in Windows, you'll get a specific activation type, and you'll get the content slightly differently. But from a feature perspective, yes.
Can you register for a web URL? And the reason I'm coming from, the place I'm coming from is like, I hate the YouTube mobile website. I would love it if the YouTube app would be the one that receives all the requests from all the, you know, www.youtube links and things like that.
Yep. So that's something that we've looked at in the past and decided not to enable. So what we've said instead is that that really should be done on the service side, so that the service, the web service, the web web server should check the user agent string of the incoming request and say, is this a platform that I have an app for? And if so, do a redirect in the browser. And that doing it that way, the browser will actually launch the application. So you'll get a little interstitial that the browser launches, but then the app will launch.
Okay. So I guess you got to go talk to Google.
Yes. Yeah.
Thanks.
We'll get back to you on that. We'll go talk to Google.